Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dean Baker, the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, whose books include Taking Economics Seriously, False Profits, The Recovery from the Bubble Economy, and The Conservative Nanny State, How the Wealthy Use the Government to Stay Rich and Get Richer. He also writes the popular economics blog Beat the Press, and his latest D book is The End of Loser Liberalism, Making Markets Progressive. And he has an article in the UK Guardian, True Free Market Proponents Should Support Private-Public Competition, and another at the Huffington Post, Corporate Cronyism, The Secret to Overpaid CEOs. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dean Baker.
Thanks for having me on.
And the great bête noire to many liberals, and particularly liberal economists, of course, is Larry Summers. And he's come out suggesting not so much that people like Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates should pay more income tax, but that we should close tax loopholes that largely benefit the richest 1%, like capital gains exemptions, real estate provisions, and corporate tax breaks. And this would help the middle class. So in terms of corporate cronyism, the secrets to overpaid CEOs, that's all we've been hearing lately, hasn't it? Billionaires talking about Kristallnacht and being oppressed and the 1% being scapegoated, and even saying that the super rich should, depending on how many millions they have, they should get more votes per millions of dollars. I mean...
Yeah. No, it's good to see Larry Summers. I think he said similar things in the past. They'd support higher taxes, getting rid of some of the loopholes. You know, I think that's a good idea, how far you can go with that. For example, capital gains is a little tricky because people won't declare capital gains. In other words, you know, if I have a ton of stock and, it doubles, triples, quadruples, as it is, you only pay tax when you actually sell it. So you have an very easy way to avoid capital gains taxes. You just don't sell it. So, again, I'm all for cutting loopholes, closing loopholes. I just don't know how far that goes. What I focused on in talking about CEOs in much of my work is how these people got so rich to begin with. And there I took really strong issue with Larry Summers, because I think he gives them a buy. And he says, you know, look, we really can't keep them from getting rich. And the point I've made, and, you know, certainly in talking about the CEOs, they get rich because we made a structure that gets them rich, and we can keep them from getting that rich. And in that piece, I was focusing on directors. These are the people who are supposed to be looking at the CEO and saying, are you doing us shareholders the best job possible for the money we pay you? Can we get someone else at a lower price? Can we go to Europe? Can we go to China and get someone at a lower price? And I say that to people, invariably they laugh. And I go, no, that is what the directors are supposed to be doing. But they never do it. I'm sure they would all laugh if I suggested it to them.
Well, my understanding is that so much of corporate America now, the CEOs are buying back stock, even Apple, which is a very popular and user-friendly corporation, buying back their stock. But isn't the CEO class, aren't they the servants to the banks and the oligarchs? And that they're essentially operating, isn't this kind of a bribe that if you do our bidding, you can make hundreds of millions of dollars?
Well, it's very hard to put it that way, because you have a lot of people who run companies to make hundreds of millions of dollars and wreck them. You know, so you had the CEO at AIG who walked away with a going away present of $40 million. Now, was he doing what someone was asking him to do when he almost would have put him out of business absent a government bailout? I think he was just very happy to pocket $40 million, and he was ripping off the shareholders. Now, in general, I'm not going to like the shareholders per se, but among the shareholders are government pension funds, private pension funds, and a lot of individuals with 401ks. And, you know, given the choice of the money going to the CEOs or the shareholders, I would say the shareholders, because, you know, they're at least putting up the money. The CEOs are just ripping off the company.
Well, I one of the cases that I've always referred to because of the issues involving broadband, and you know that since that Verizon case in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals that could destroy net neutrality, the CEO of Verizon, which is the company, by the way, that won the suit against the interests of the consumers, and now you've had Comcast and Time Warner merging. So in trying to cover that, the former CEO of Verizon's the guy that put down Fios, which was a great high-speed fiber optic system, but Wall Street decided it was too long-term and they wanted short-term profit results, so they forced him out. and they got a compliant CEO. So that's my paradigm, if you will, for how I see corporate America operating. But
Well, I see corporate America operating increased profits. And my point here is that you have a lot of CEOs, they don't increase the company's profits. They don't increase the share price, and they still put tens of millions, hundreds of millions in their pocket. I take it for granted. Companies are going to try and make profit, you know, which means they're going to do a lot of sleazy thing. That raises another issue. But companies are going to try and make profits. I just take that for granted. That means paying workers as little as possible. It means if they could increase monopoly power in a market, they're going to do that. They don't have to pay CEOs tens of millions or hundred millions to do that, because they have plenty who will do it for a million, 2 million. So you know, if they're doing something horrible, I would rather them pay a CEO 1 or 2 million rather than 40 million. And part of the point here is, again, that's money from shareholders, but this also creates a pay structure throughout the economy. You have university presidents that get 2 million a year. And their assistants who are twiddling their thumbs, you know, the deans, the provost, they can get hundreds of thousands. They get 700,000, 800,000, 900,000, some of these people. So you create a pay structure throughout the economy that's really pernicious as a result of having these hugely overpaid CEOs. So it's not to defend at all the pernicious things that many companies do to maximize profits. But I take it for granted they're going to do that. They don't have to pay someone $40 million to do that. There's plenty of people willing to do that for $1 million, $1.5 million.
So how then do they get away with a Dean Baker? How do they value themselves in this way? I mean, here in Hollywood, big movie stars that launch movies get paid a lot of money, less than they used to, you know, the George Clooney's and the Brad Pitt's. But that's based upon their popularity at the end of the day. In the corporate system that you have here in the United States, it would be like paying Chuck Norris $20 million for a film.
Yeah, this is what we're trying to highlight. You know, we started this feature on our website, Director Watch, and we're partnering with Huffington Post that has PayPal's, which is the database for this. The story, the people are supposed to hold down CEO pay are the corporate directors. They're supposed to work for the shareholders, and they're supposed to be constantly saying to the CEO, are you doing the best job that we could, you know, that any CEO could do for us? Are you doing it at the least possible cost? And again, I really doubt they ever ask that question. I really doubt they ever say, oh, could we get someone for less? And they routinely sign contracts with CEOs that just make no sense. The CEO of Exxon back a few years ago walked away with somewhere around $400 million. Wasn't he done a great job running the company? Oil prices went through the roof while he was CEO, so Exxon's profits and stock prices did. Now, did they have to write a contract that allowed him to get hugely rich because of something he had nothing to do with? They could have just indexed his pay to the share prices of other oil companies, and I doubt he would have walked away with a tenth as much. They aren't stupid people. They know how to do that. So the point here is to put pressure on the directors. They're supposed to be working for the shareholders, and what that means is not paying the CEO $1 more than you have to.
Again, I'm speaking with Dean Baker, who's the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, whose books include Taking Economics Seriously, False Profits, Recovering from the Bubble Economy, and The Conservative Nanny State, How the Wealthy Use the Government to Stay Rich and Get Richer. He also writes the popular economics blog Beat the Press, and his latest e-book is The End of Loser Liberalism, Making Markets Progressive. He has an article at the UK Guardian, True Free Market Proponents Should Support Private-Public Competition, and another at the Huffington Post, Corporate Cronyism, The Secret to Overpaid CEOs. Now, turning to your article in the UK Guardian, you're talking about Obama's mention in his State of the Union of MIRA, as it's called. Is that... most of his proposals were pretty modest, in terms of paying government contract workers minimum wage. I didn't get the impression that the big issues were being taken on. In contrast to President Obama, Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are proposing, to save the post office, which is going broke. Most coverage about it is it's going broke because of FedEx and UPS. But the main reason it's going broke is that they have to prepay 75 years of pensions, billions and billions of dollars in the red, by a decree from the Congress. But in order to save the post office, as opposed to Dianne Feinstein's husband, who's been given an exclusive contract to sell off these valuable properties in a huge windfall for him and his company, what Senators Warren and Sanders are suggesting is that the post office could start banking, which they used to do in the 60s.
No, it's exactly right. And, you know, in fact, the Postal Service, the head of the Postal Service has suggested this himself. So it's not just, you know, a few members in Congress, a few progressives. It's, you know, it's coming from the Postal Service as well. And the argument here is that you have a great resource. You have post offices, you know, basically in every neighborhood in the country. And why not take advantage of these resources? Why not use them to offer an alternative to the private financial system? That, you know, you have large unbanked population, a lot of people aren't being served or well served. So why not give them the option of banking with the Postal Service if they would like? And I think it's a great idea. And again, it's really hard to see a downside. And, you know, we aren't talking about outlawing private banking, you know, so it's not as though we're going to be shutting down the private banks. We're going to be giving people an option. And if they don't think the post office is a good alternative, they don't think it's efficient, they're not friendly or whatever, go with the private banking system. But, you know, here we're just talking about giving people an option. And it's just striking how much anger that provokes.
Well, isn't there something like 60 million Americans that don't have bank accounts that would if they could, and that they rely on payday lenders and people like that? And most of them are in these rural areas where the post office or the postal service serves these areas.
Dude, I'm not positive it's as high as 60 million, but we have somewhere around 15% to 20% of the households are unbanked. And, you know, they certainly could benefit from having access to banking services. And, you know, on the one hand, you have the payday lenders. The other that's probably at least as pernicious is these money order places, where certainly this is true for the immigrant population. But a lot of people, when they want to, they have to have a check made out, they go down and they could pay $5, $10 on a check that might be $50, $60, $100, incredibly high percentage payment. So it might not be that high as a dollar amount. You know, you look at it at $5 or $10, but in terms of the amount of money, a share of the amount of money, it's enormous. So if you had a postal banking system where people can go down there and have a money order made out, you know, whatever it costs, you know, $1, $2, that would certainly be an enormous savings for this unbanked population, which is generally lower income people.
So, Dean Baker, just returning to what Larry Summers, the kind of bête noire of liberals, who was President Obama's economic advisor and Treasury Secretary, he has this op-ed in the Washington Post on Sunday that argued that taxing the Mark Zuckerbergs and the Bill Gates is not going to help the middle class, but closing tax loopholes that benefit the wealthy, like the capital gains exemptions and real estate provisions and corporate tax breaks, this could help the middle class and poor Americans. And this, of course, in the context of how many of the one percenters are getting defensive and paranoid and strange, you know, like this Tom Perkins guy talking about Kristallnacht, and we should have more, if we have more money, we should have more votes, that kind of insanity. Do you think that Summers is going to, he's going to move this debate? Because it's out there in the zeitgeist, isn't it, in terms of people's growing awareness of the income and wealth inequality in this country?
Well, it's helpful for obviously Summers has a lot of prominence, and, you know, again, someone who tends to be on the more conservative, but certainly corporate side of things. So it's certainly good to have him out there. But I think, as I say, I think the more important thing is to focus on the before-tax income, how it is that these people got so rich to begin with. I know when I wrote about this, he mentioned Bill Gates, and I thought one of the great ironies, well, why is Bill Gates very rich? Well, not because he's created great software. I don't know anyone. I'm more at the user end, but I know people who are at the producer end of software. I don't know anyone who thinks that Microsoft is a good operating system. He managed to monopolize the industry because he has very sharp elbows, and basically he ignored the rules, and the Justice Department let him do that. So my view is, well, no, actually, there are things we could do that would have made Bill Gates much less wealthy. It might be too late now because his monopoly is already fading. But, you know, if you go back 10, 15, 20 years, we could have made him less wealthy by preventing him from monopolizing the market and had better software. So Summers' piece, he was warning, oh, you don't want to do that because then, you know, we wouldn't have the incentives for people like Bill Gates to become very wealthy. I look at it and go, well, no, the way Bill Gates got wealthy was by basically giving us bad software and using his, you know, again, smart guy, I'm sure, his ingenuity, whatever, to monopolize the market, not by giving us the best possible software. So I want to look at the ways in which these people have gotten extremely rich and change the rules so that they don't facilitate these huge fortunes, often in ways that hurt the economy.
Well, Dean Baker, I thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Again, I've been speaking with Dean Baker, who's the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, whose books include Taking Economics Seriously, False Profits, Recovering from the Bubble Economy, and The Conservative Nanny State, How the Wealthy Use the Government to Stay Rich and Get Richer. He also writes the popular economics blog Beat the Press, and his latest e-book is The End of Looser Liberalism, Making Markets Progressive. And he has an article at the Guardian of the UK Guardian, True Free Markets Proponents Should Support Private-Public Competition, and another at the Huffington Post, Corporate Cronyism, The Secrets to Overpaid CEOs. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back with Bill Zimmerman talking about his new e-book, The Student Loan Swindle, Why It Happened, Who's to Blame, How the Victims Can Be Saved.